Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. You're listening at CindySheehanSoapbox.com or CommunityProgressiveRadio.org. As the show comes out on Sunday, April 7th, Tour de Peace and I, the group Tour de Peace, we're biking from Santa Monica, Arlington West, Santa Monica, to Rancho Cucamonga. And you can go to our website, tourdepeace.org, and follow our exploits there. Our guest today is journalist Nora Barrows Friedman. She works on the Palestinian issues and blogs at Electronic Intifada. Nora Barrows Friedman, welcome to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Thank you so much, Cindy.
Oh, it's so nice to talk to you. I haven't talked to you for so long. I can't even remember when was the last time.
I know. It has been a long time. And it's so good to hear your voice, and I'm so excited that you're doing this radio show.
Well, thank you. So, Nora, can you tell my listeners a little bit about yourself and what you, you know, what you do and what your major focus is these days?
Yeah, well, when we used to talk, Cindy, I was the senior producer and co-host of Flashpoints, which is an investigative daily news magazine coming out of the Pacifica Radio Network. And I was there from 2003 to 2010, and then I was hired on staff by the Electronic Intifada, where I still am today, happily. And we focus on stories of Palestinian human rights and analysis on, you know, everything related to Palestine activism and, you know, legal issues and human rights issues. So my focus has been, you know, over the last decade, I've been going back and forth to Palestine, to the West Bank and Gaza Strip, and inside historic Palestine or Israel, documenting stories of, of everyday life for Palestinians under occupation and under this apartheid regime. So that's still my focus. And as a staff member and contributor to the Electronic Intifada, I still have a way to document what's happening, especially in this country when it comes to Palestinian human rights and those in, you know, acting in solidarity with Palestinians here in this country.
Okay, great. Thank you. And looking over, I'd like to talk about the case of the Holy Land 5 because I was also in Dallas with one of the organizers of the defense, you know, the defense for the Holy Land 5 and what is the status of the case today. But before we get into it, I was reading some of your reporting on Electronic Intifada, and you are truly a journalist. You're not just a mouthpiece for corporate America like we find too much in our system. But I was really struck by a case here in California or something that's happening down in Claremont McKenna College around, I believe it did happen during National Israeli Apartheid Week. And that's for education and to help people understand what's really happening in Palestine, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Actually, it's an international effort, the Israeli Apartheid Week. Yeah.
Well, you know, I travel around the world, and I find that the people most ignorant about that situation are people here in the United States.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we're the ones that need to have the most education about what's really going on in that part of the world. But what happened down in Claremont McKenna College recently?
Well, about a month ago, students affiliated with Students for Justice in Palestine, which is a national activism organization on U.S. campuses, created a mock checkpoint, and they built this to to build a wall, and they had students dressed up in you know, army green, and they, you know, produced this kind of theatrical action in which students who were coming into a cafeteria area were, you know, asked for their IDs and you know, kind of given a, you know, a very you know, interesting look at what Palestinians go through every single day in the West Bank, where, you know, where there are dozens and dozens and dozens of checkpoints, where Israeli soldiers arrest people at whim, where there is violence at the checkpoints. You know, and there wasn't any violence or anything happening at this mock checkpoint at Claremont McKenna College, but you know, but one adult came to the you know, the area in which this mock checkpoint action was taking place, and he you know, without identifying himself at first, he asked the campus security and also some administration officials to shut the event down, and the students had filed a a petition sort of thing, you know, and all the paperwork was in order beforehand saying that they were going to do this, and it was approved by the administration, and so, you know, the administration or the campus security could shut this event down. So, you know, he wasn't so, this adult wasn't so pleased with that, and he went over and basically got in the face of some of these students, and when one of the students asked, you know, who he was and if he could identify himself, please, the adult man basically fired an epithet at him and you know, told him to F off, and then called him a cockroach. And then the campus security officer who was there you know, got his information. It turns out he was a professor at Claremont McKenna College. He's an Israeli citizen living in the US. He's an economics professor. And he then said that all the kids at this one college, you know, Claremont McKenna is one of five colleges in the Claremont college system, and these students, some of them were from Pitzer College, which is a sister college, and he said that all Pitzer kids are cockroaches, and just, you know, really, it was, you know, to Palestinians, to the Palestinian student. Especially that this this derogatory term was was targeted to. You know, he is a Palestinian student. He grew up. He spent the last 10 years in the West Bank at high school, and he was. He said that he was called a cockroach by actual Israeli soldiers on a regular basis at these checkpoints, and so it was really hurtful and an act of verbal violence against him to now have, you know, an Israeli professor, you know, 10,000 miles away, again, calling him a cockroach. The administration has refused to do anything. You know,
well,
there,
and this adult did turn out to be a professor, right?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And, you know, he, in fact, may have violated the code of conduct for, you know, acts of racism and hate, you know, hate speech. And but still, the administration has not taken any action. The professor is still teaching. They say that there's an investigation going on, but nothing really has been settled yet. And meanwhile, the student, because he was public about what happened to him and the other students there, he was then subjected to other violent acts on campus. Someone had threatened, you know, physically threatened him, leaving a very disturbing, threatening note on his reserve seat in the library. His car tire had been deliberately flattened. Someone had shoved a sharpened metal key into his car tire. And still nothing has been done to protect him or his property on campus.
Well, there's an interesting correlation to this. Can you talk about the California's legislator passing of the resolution? Was it H.R. 35 or something like that?
H.R. 35, yeah. At the very end of the session in late August last year, the California State Assembly passed a non-binding resolution that sent chilling shockwaves across the state in activism communities and in university faculty circles. H.R. 35 is a resolution that calls on all universities and colleges in the state of California to adopt anti-Semitism guidelines, which is great. There should never be any tolerance of anti-Semitism. But the way in which this is framed, they conflate anti-Semitism with criticism of Israeli policy, which is a very dangerous and very inaccurate way to look at what anti-Semitism actually is. They're saying that basically, if there's activism on campus, if students are engaged in the kind of actions, that we saw at Claremont McKenna with these mock checkpoints, that could be considered as anti-Semitic activity. When we know that that has nothing to do with Judaism. We're talking about, legitimate criticism of the policies of a foreign state, which, violate human rights of Palestinians. There's a lot to be done in California, unfortunately. And we know that the resolution was actually, the language of the resolution was drafted with help from the Simon Wiesenthal Center, which is a very heavy right-wing Zionist pro-Israel organization. And the Israel lobby groups like the Simon Wiesenthal Center and the Anti-Defamation League and the Zionist Organization of America and all these, Stand With Us groups that are heavily tied to the Israeli government, we know that they know that the campus activism, circles are really the battleground, because this is, on campus is where students learn about, what's really happening in the world, and they're able to question, these ideas that they've just been kind of, blindly handed by their parents or their communities, especially when it comes to what's happening, to Palestinians. And so they're targeting campuses as a battlefield. They're intimidating students. They're intimidating university administrations. It's really scary what's happening in California and the rest of the country.
Well, also, they have, I think since Vietnam, had a really targeted, program of hyper-militarization of our universities, through grants from the military and, military-industrial complex and things like that. I mean, even anything from Monsanto donating to universities to hamper academic freedom, I think that's what we see is happening.
That's right, exactly.
All of the issues the universities and academic freedom and students are under attack.
That's right. Absolutely. I mean, when you have these outside political groups coming in and basically doing these witch hunts for faculty and also students who are engaging in activism, or even faculty who are talking openly about Israel policy in an analytical and fact-based way, these people are being, I can't even describe how frightening it is when there really is a threat to academic freedom, when faculty have to now think whether to put something on their, on their syllabus or their reading list, that questions, Zionism, or that questions, the role, the relationship between Israel and the U.S.
Well, let's, go on to the status of the case of the Holy Land 5. First of all, can you explain what the persecution was, and then let my listeners know what is the status of that case and the people who are in prison?
Yeah, the case of the Holy Land Five is just one of the most shocking and unbelievable miscarriages of justice in this country. And it basically the Holy Land Foundation was the largest Muslim charity organization in the U.S. before 9/11. They were an organization that provided relief aid for Palestinian refugee children in the West Bank, in Gaza, in Jordan, and Lebanon. They helped open hospitals. They helped fund the building of schools. They organized orphan sponsorship programs for Palestinian kids. They also provided relief aid in Bosnia and Chechnya and Turkey and Albania. And they also opened food pantries here in the U.S. For people in need in mostly on the East Coast, but they also did a lot of disaster relief after the Oklahoma City bombing and tornadoes and floods and earthquakes around the country. And since the mid-90s, the Israel lobby organizations wanted to shut this Muslim charity organization down because they were so successful, especially in providing aid to Palestinian refugee children. But the government really didn't have a case until the Patriot Act was passed shortly after 9/11, and the Bush administration wanted essentially to make an example out of the Holy Land Foundation. They actually shut down, I believe, how many? The six major Muslim organizations by December 2001. So, just 2, 3 months after 9/11, they shut down all of these organizations, including the Holy Land Foundation, and they freezed all their assets. And they were accused of funneling money to terrorist organizations, specifically Hamas in the Gaza Strip, without providing any evidence. There was no evidence. In fact, the government accused the Holy Land Foundation of funneling money to Hamas using these charity organizations on the ground there. These were the same charity organizations that the United Nations and the U.S. Aid for International Development, Agency for International Development, USAID, have continued to provide money
Wow.
to. So
That's pretty egregious.
It's incredibly egregious. It's
Wow.
and in the first trial in 2007, the jury came back as undecided. They were a hung jury because there was no evidence linking these charity organizations to Hamas or the Holy Land Foundation to funneling money to terrorist organizations or that the government deems terrorist organizations. So then the government wasn't satisfied with that, and they issued another trial. And in, I guess that came back in November 2008. This was the first time in U.S. history that the government allowed testimony by an anonymous witness to happen in court. And the
Wow.
anonymous witness was an Israeli intelligence agent. Who, purported to be an expert on these organizations in Gaza that the Holy Land Foundation was accused of funneling money to. And so that was a clear violation of the Sixth Amendment of the Constitution, which allows the accused to confront their accuser. The defendants couldn't, and their lawyers couldn't cross-examine this witness because he was an anonymous secret witness. And in November of 2008, the jury came back and convicted the Holy Land Five, the five leaders of the Holy Land Foundation, under the guidelines of the material support law of the Patriot Act. So unfortunately, even without any, again, no actual concrete evidence that these men had done anything that they were accused of, they were handed down sentences of 15 to 65 years in prison, essentially for feeding Palestinian children. That's what it came down to. And last October, the U.S. Supreme Court declined to hear the case. So they're still serving their sentences. And it's really just been an appalling theater of what this government, you know, the Bush administration and now the Obama administration, is willing to do to bypass, you know, the sanctity of the U.S. Constitution, you know, to really make an example and intimidate anybody who's trying to you know, feed Palestinian children and do the right thing, you know, so that people are now frightened to do that. You know, they right. want to build their case that, you know, that Muslims and Islam is this, you know, global evil, and, you know, this wave of national Islamophobia has just been fed by the government's prosecution of these five exemplary men who ran this charity.
Well, what kind of activism is going on around it, Nora? You know, we always hear free the Cuban Five, free Lynn Stewart, you know, free other political prisoners, free Bradley Manning. And, you know, of course, that's all, you know, we need to, but what kind of activism is going, you know, around the freeing the political prisoners of the Holy Land Five?
That's a really good question. I mean, now that all the legal options are somewhat, pretty much exhausted at this point, because the Supreme Court refused to hear the case, I think people are kind of regrouping and figuring out how to proceed next. Noor El-Ashi, who's the daughter of Ghassan El-Ashi, who was one of the Holy Land Five, who received a 65-year sentence and is now serving his time in something called a communications management unit, which is a prison within a prison in Illinois, where mostly Muslim and Arab men are, who were convicted of you know, something after 9/11. She has been at the forefront of activism and organizing around her father's case and the case of the other four in the Holy Land Five. Right now, you know, it's hard to say what can be done except for pressing for full exoneration and some sort of a reversal of all of this. But you know, people are still active around this issue. You know, there's a website set up called, I think it's freedomtogive.org, and you know, you can find a lot more information about specific actions. But right now, it's really hard to say. You know, I spoke to a couple of the lawyers involved in this case, especially right after the Supreme Court denied their appeal, and it's really tough to say what the next option can be. I mean, you know, with the legal recourses now all kind of shoved into the closet, you know, right now it's up to the people. It's up to you know, a miracle at this point, and activism to really shed light on what's happening.
Well, thank you, Nora, and I will link the website to my newsletter and to my website. And people, the best place for you is obviously Electronic Intifada.
That's right, electronicintifada.net. And if you type in Holy Land 5 in the little search box, you can find all of our articles on the Holy Land 5.
Excuse me. Great. Well, Nora Barrows Friedman, thank you so much for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox, and we wish you continued, you know, best wishes on your travel and your activism and your journalism.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Cindy, for all you do.
All right.
Sounds
bye-bye.
Good. Thanks so much, Cindy. Bye.
Well, that's Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox for today. While I'm on the road, I plan on continuing the show on a weekly basis. There might be some weeks where it's not going to work, but we will have the show up, and maybe we'll have some reports from the road, too. I'd like to thank, as always, my engineer, Don DeBar, and my producer, Mikey. I'd like to thank our wonderful guest, Nora Barrows Friedman. And I'd like to thank you for listening and supporting the show. I'm Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Peace out for now.